ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
So, Ben, I was going to ask you about how Cincinnati's feeling and everything, but then I came upon this local news report.
We have some trending Bengals news. Cincinnati Public Schools announced that there will be no classes on Monday, February 14th, in honor of the Bengals Super Bowl appearance. They're giving staff and students the day off to hopefully celebrate the city's first ever Super Bowl win.
The day after the Super Bowl, regardless of what happens, Cincinnati Public Schools are giving their kids, they're giving teachers, all staff the day off. Ben, what the hell is happening in Cincinnati right now?
Not just Cincinnati Public Schools, but other school districts go, well, you know, do we really want the kids in school on Monday?
Ben Baby covers the Cincinnati Bengals for ESPN.
If you notice, it's also the staff in Cincinnati Public Schools that aren't coming in. And I have a hunch that it may be for the staff, not necessarily the kids, because there's a lot of teachers who might be celebrating pretty hard if the Bengals win their first ever Super Bowl.
Yeah, a lot of adults who've been waiting a very long time and won't let educating the youth of their city to let that stand in the way.
No, I mean, these kids have plenty of time to learn. Let's be honest. You know, there's only one day to really celebrate, the day after the Super Bowl. That's where our priorities are right now in Cincinnati. When the Bengals entered this postseason, it had been since January 1991, the infamous Curse of Bo Jackson, as it's known in Cincinnati, when Bo got hurt in a playoff game against the Bengals.
Bo Jackson has some room. One man to beat, and from behind, Kevin Walker saves another touchdown.
Bo Jackson, shaken up a bit, has not gotten to his feet as yet.
The Raiders won that game in 1991, and the Bengals had not won a playoff game since. So they ended the curse in the first round against the Raiders, and then all of a sudden, they started to get some momentum, and now they're playing in the Super Bowl for the first time since 1989. That's what's really stunning for me, is how much people in Cincinnati care about the Bengals, because that hasn't always been the case. You had fire trucks greeting the Bengals when they arrived back in town. I think when they landed at the airport, you had fans at the stadium. We've seen, you know, videos of folks crying.
Bengals in a ball! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
The emotional outpour that people have had locally, it's just truly been incredible to witness.
Look, I'm going to be very honest with you. When the NFL season kicked off back in September, I never imagined that we would be doing a Cincinnati Bengals show during Super Bowl week. This is a team that was very recently the worst in the league. They hadn't won a playoff game in 3 decades. They started this season with 125-1 odds of making it to the Super Bowl at all. But today, it is time for us to welcome you to the jungle. A place that finally has their priorities in order. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, February 9th. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Ben Baby, I'm very glad you're here with me. I've been trying to practice the local tongue in an attempt to communicate with you as best I can. So, first off, who day?
I think I'm supposed to reply who day. And it's really funny. So I'll be walking around, like, we're in Kansas City and people will see me like at the hotel and around there. They all yell who day to me. And I don't really know what to respond back because I'm not a Bengals fan, but I also don't want to offend these people. So I just kind of smile and I'm like, yep, that's right. Like, good luck to you guys. And so I've kind of gotten that down, but there's been a whole lot of who daying. It's quite jarring how many I've heard in over the last couple weekends.
You mentioned you're not a Bengals fan, Ben, but you are our Bengals reporter. When did you start doing this job for us?
So I started out in 2019, and a lot of people have texted me, a lot of friends, like, oh, the Bengals didn't start getting good until you covered them. I said, I need you guys to hold on a second here, because if you might recall, the Bengals were the worst team in the NFL my first season.
On first and 15, Dalton picked off. Gilmore down the sideline. See you later. Touchdown.
This was a pretty old roster, a seasoned roster that was a few years removed from making the playoffs in 2015. The more the season started to unfold, you begin to realize that, oh, this team really needed to bottom out and do a full rebuild.
One snap and this one will be over, and the Jaguars will go to 3-4. The Bengals will drop to 0-7.
First-year coach Zach Taylor came in, and I think they immediately realized there was a lot of learning the coaching staff had to do. That first season in Taylor's year, you looked around and there was nobody in the stands. I mean, you were lucky if another team had a good traveling fan base like the Steelers or the Patriots, and then you might actually feel like you're at a football game. But in that first season, I mean, it looked pretty bleak, and it's just really incredible to think about that just a couple years later, the Bengals are playing for the Super Bowl, Pablo.
Yeah, I mean, this is 2 years ago we're talking about, and it's important to remember, too, that 2019 season, that was the year where everybody assumed that the Dolphins were just going to tank their way to the number one overall pick. That was the whole tank for two a year, obviously. Like, this is very resonant now, given the entire Brian Flores news cycle. But the Dolphins end up winning five games, thanks to Flores and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And the Bengals find themselves with the number one overall pick in the year in which this transfer quarterback at LSU, this Ohio native, incidentally, when that guy happens to turn in the greatest quarterback season I think we've ever seen in college football history, Ben.
Second and goal from that two. Burrow to throw for the man wide open, back corner of the end zone. It's Terrence Marshall for the score. It can't be any easier for the Tigers of LSU.
Yeah, I used to joke, I think Cincinnati would have burned down if the Bengals didn't draft Burrow at number one. And it was interesting because, you know, you talk about the culture, and we've seen a lot of comments, especially in the last few days, about why you shouldn't tank. And I think that a lot of the lessons that staff learned in 2019 and in trying to win and trying to be good really set the table for being successful in 2021. I remember I talked to assistant coach, you know, and said, you know, they had heard all the things about, oh, you know, the Bengals aren't trying to win games. Like, they played Ryan Finley. Of course, they're not trying to win. And he goes, listen, if we weren't trying to win, we would be getting out of here at night a whole lot earlier. We wouldn't be working these long hours if we weren't trying to be successful. And that 2019 season, when you look back at it, was really pivotal because it set the foundation for the culture Zach Taylor was trying to build. And I know that's a buzzword in a lot of places that really is hard to define. But a lot of the guys who felt that losing in 2019, in 2020, and then 2021 realized that we've been bad for a couple of years. We can't really do this anymore.
Well, it's important to remember, too, Ben, how the 2020 year went for the Bengals. Because Joe Burrow, it's his rookie season. He's playing really well. But then in week 11, this happens.
Third and two. Burrow hit on a release, puts an arrow under it. Near side for Boyd, and it's incomplete. And now Burrow, oh boy, clutching his left leg. Uh-oh. Oh no.
It's this devastating, catastrophic knee injury, a torn ACL and MCL. Given the fact that Joe Burrow hadn't even played a full NFL season coming into this year, what were the expectations like for him as recently as, you know, this fall?
Yeah, you know, when he came in, I think a lot of people were wondering what he was going to look like, what the rehab was going to look like. And, you know, he was there in OTAs and you know, he was there for all of the summer workouts. He didn't miss a beat throughout the entire rehab process when the Bengals were back out there. He was still there. He wasn't obviously able to operate at a full capacity. But then when he was fully cleared for the first practice of the preseason, Someone asked him if he felt lucky to be here.
How grateful are you to be standing where you're standing after what happened this eight times?
Burrow quickly was like, no, I'm not lucky. I worked my butt off.
You know, I don't know if grateful is the right word. A lot of hard work went into that. I had great people around me that worked really hard to get here. So, you know, there was a lot of hard work from a lot of different people that helped me. And so I am grateful for the help that I had, but I also put it into work.
It's that relentlessness that we've seen from Burrow. And I think that there is a guy who's really driven and has always looked for ways to get better. And I know a lot of athletes do that, but with Burrow, it definitely seems special to the point that, you know, everyone was asking about the knee injury and how he was going to come back. Well, in Joe's mind, it wasn't just the knee he wanted to kind of rehab and get better. He also wanted to improve his arm strength. And once I heard that, it became very clear to me that this is who this guy is.
Yeah, and when you talk about the evolution of Joe Burrow, Ben, it's impossible to not obsess about what happened when they made the AFC title game, right? So the Bengals this year, they go 10-7. They win the AFC North narrowly. And here they are against a team that has made four in a row of these, the Kansas City Chiefs, and supposedly the loudest stadium, and not merely the NFL, but according to the Guinness Book of World Records, the entire world. The Bengals promptly go down 21-3 to the Kansas City Chiefs. And the entire world, myself included, is just like, all right, this was cool. Nice little Cinderella run, but, you know, let's move on to the big boys now. But how would you describe what happened from there?
Honestly, it felt like, oh, as I was sitting there watching the game, I go, wait a minute. Didn't I just watch this game a few weeks ago in Cincinnati?
Right, this is week 17 when the Bengals beat the Chiefs at home.
In that game, Kansas City looked like they were going to run the Bengals out of their own stadium. Then all of a sudden, you know, they kind of whipped up a touchdown out of thin air, cut the deficit to 11 at halftime. And then all of a sudden in the second half, Patrick Mahomes is completely befuddled by the Cincinnati defense, and the Bengals end up coming back and winning a big game.
McPherson, the kick is good, and the Bengals have won the AFC North.
And I'm sitting here in Kansas City going, this all looks familiar. And all of a sudden they go down by 11 at halftime. And then we see a replay of essentially that first game where Patrick Mahomes is really just doesn't have an answer for what the Bengals were doing defensively. And then Patrick Mahomes got the ball to start overtime.
Yep.
When Mahomes gets the ball, you're probably not getting it back. Instead, that defense is able to manufacture an interception.
And now they go deep down the field, and it is intercepted on the rebound.
Burrow is able to go down, you know, take the offense down the field, and they're able to win that game winner.
From 31 yards, McPherson, and Cincinnati is heading to the Super Bowl. They did it. They beat Mahomes at home. Wow, Joe Burrow. No way.
Frankly, you know, I picked against the Bengals. A lot of Bengals fans gave me grief for it, but I said, surely they can't make this happen again, and they proved me wrong.
It really does seem from the outside, Ben, that Joe Burrow has fundamentally changed the psychology of this entire franchise. He's undefeated in elimination games, number one, since college. And now I just watch him radiate this insane confidence. Like after the Chiefs game, this is after the AFC Championship, Joe Burrow comes out wearing what exactly?
He's wearing the JB9 chain and he looks like he's a villain in a Bond movie or whatever movie you want.
Yes.
And someone asked him if the diamonds were fake in the chain. And I know his jeweler out of Houston, Leo Frost. And I was telling people that you can't be a jeweler in Houston and have fake diamonds in your chains because you're going to get ran out of the building. And Burrow came out there and he said,
they're definitely real. I think I make too much money to have fake ones. So, you know, these are real.
He goes, you know, I make too much money to have fake diamonds. And what I find interesting is that, you know, this isn't the first time that Burrow's fashion choices have you know, caused the conversation. You know, he wore the Cartier shades, I believe.
Oh, the rectangular, really fashionable, loud ones.
The pink ones. And if you want to know, going back to our conversation about what it's like in Cincinnati, we have seen a sharp rise in Cincinnati of people trying to pull those shades off. And unfortunately, they are not as successful, but they really don't care because if their quarterback's wearing it, why shouldn't they?
And to be very clear, Ben, it's not just the look of Joe Burrow, it is the sound of him also, because every week it does feel like there's something that he says that is just dripping with some self-possession. Like last week, for instance.
Joe, does this feel like a normal game? Are you treating this like a normal game, or does, or are you letting yourself admit that this might feel a little different?
No, it really doesn't. You know, coming into to this week game prep, it, you know, it just feels like another week. Obviously, it's the Super Bowl, and we're going to have to, you know, try to eliminate as many distractions as we can. But, you know, it just feels normal.
So what do you make of that? What do you make of his persona and how the team in response has been feeding off of that?
Yeah, you know, back when he got drafted in 2020, I wrote a feature for ESPN, and I said that if there's anybody who can really turn around the Bengals, it might be Joe Burrow. And the reason is when he, you know, he grew up in Southeast Ohio, went to Athens High School, and that was not a high school known for winning. And all of a sudden, Joe Burrow came in and he took them a drive away from winning the state championship. And that kind of losing, especially when you're, you know, when you're a certain part of the country or you're known historically, like, we just don't win here. A lot of times people feed into that. I used to cover high school football, and whenever you had a team that was hot and they ran into a team that they know they hadn't beaten, their older brothers hadn't beaten them, their parents hadn't beaten them, that weighs on your mind on game day. But for Joe Burrow, stuff like that doesn't really matter. And when he arrived in Cincinnati, you know, the Bengals hadn't won a playoff game, like I said, since January 1991. And yet none of it really matters when he's on the field. And I think that is really impressive that he has the mentality to go out and say, even though we don't have a history of being successful, we're essentially going to will it and we're going to make it happen. And so the confidence we see after games, that's not a shock, because I've always thought that that's kind of why he's been so successful throughout the course of his life. And to see it manifest itself in the playoffs on the biggest stages that we have in American sports, it is quite remarkable, but it's not a shock.
Speaking of big stages, Ben, I want to take a visit with you to the Cincinnati Zoo after the break.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Ben, it's time for the real journalism here, because I need to ask you about Fiona the Hippo. And for people who aren't familiar with Legend of Fiona the Hippo, she is a hippo at the Cincinnati Zoo. She's been used to predict the results of the Super Bowl every year since she was born. And I'll admit, like, she doesn't have the cleanest record, but she picked the right winner in 2018. She vomited on the item representing the Kansas City Chiefs in 2020, which I think obviously means she really picked the Bucks. So that's another correct pick for Fiona. But this year, most importantly,
check this out. Ohio's most famous hippo is ready for Super Bowl 56. And this week, she gave her thoughts on who will win. And of course, no surprise, she chooses her beloved Cincinnati Bengals.
She has picked her own hometown Bengals. How is the city of Cincinnati feeling about Fiona and her prognostication?
Listen, Fiona's just hopping on the bandwagon. She knows the vibe in the city. She's not going to go against the Bengals. Come on now. Whether it's Fiona, whether it's whoever, the buzz that we've seen, you know, that I've seen personally in Cincinnati is just truly remarkable. But anytime you got Fiona in your corner, listen, I don't want to be going up against a hippopotamus. That's all I'm saying. I take my odds against Aaron Donald before I go against Fiona.
speaking of endangered species, Ben, it did feel like the Cincinnati Bengals fan was something that we could have been worried about for a while, rightfully so, because I'm just going to do the full accounting here. The Bengals in their history have only had two Super Bowl appearances, one in 1982, one in 1989, both of them losses to the San Francisco 49ers. The franchise has never won this thing. And as you said before, they hadn't even won a playoff game since 1991 up until this year. So what was the attitude of the fan base during those years of drought?
It wasn't pleasant. I think there was a lot of animosity, to be quite honest. I think there was a lot of frustration, a lot of grumbling against not just the team, but the front office as well for not being able to field a winner, especially as it became apparent that things were not looking good. And the franchise and the city thought that they had maybe turned a corner in 2011 when they drafted Andy Dalton and AJ Green. They started to win some division titles under Marvin Lewis, make the playoffs for every season in 2011 through 2015. They win the division in 2015, but lose Dalton. But still, I think there was some optimism. And then for them to get knocked out in that infamous game against the Steelers, the one where that featured that Vontaze Burfict hit on Antonio Brown, The Bengals just were never really the same. They lost that game, and all of a sudden, you just felt like, you know, the air just got let out of the balloon, and you wondered where the turnaround was going to be.
What I consider the most notorious story about what it was like inside of that Bengals locker room during those very, very bleak years, wide receiver TJ Houshmandzadeh tells a story about how the jock straps that they were given by the team itself happened to be used. I mean, this speaks to a larger, like, cost-cutting approach by the Cincinnati Bengals and their owner, Mike Brown. But this is the kind of thing that Bengals players just sort of, like, rattle off fairly matter-of-factly.
That narrative was also in the city as well. And when a lot of people complained about the franchise and the lack of winning, they say, well, Mike Brown doesn't really put enough into the team to win. If you run into anybody in town and they complain long enough about the Bengals, they tell you a story that seems like it's some fable of how cheap Mike Brown is. And that was a big narrative. And even leading up into the 2020 draft, it was something that was talked about. And I remember Carson Palmer, the former Bengals quarterback who played in Cincinnati and before Joe Burrow was the Bengals' most previous number one overall pick. He pointed out that he wasn't really sure if the Bengals were committed to winning.
Do you feel like the organization gave you enough support to win?
No, I mean, that's why I wanted out, is I never felt like the organization was really trying to win a Super Bowl and really chasing a Super Bowl.
Then a couple months later, we saw something quite uncharacteristic from our notoriously cheap franchise, for lack of a better phrase.
No, fair, yeah.
The Bengals went out and spent a ton of money in free agency. They went out and they got DJ Reader. They went out and got Trey Waynes. And it was almost like they said, all right, we hear what you guys have been saying, and we know that we're going to get this quarterback. And Joe Burrow has never really admitted this, or no one's really ever talked about this, but I wonder if they weren't showing Joe Burrow from the very beginning, before they even drafted him, hey, we know you've heard all this. We are interested in building a winner here.
And just to zoom out here, because we talk all the time, Ben, about the suffering, the almost biblical misery of Buffalo, for instance, what they've gone through. But Cincinnati, the city, is not merely a town that roots for the Bengals. Like, I know the Bearcats, for instance, were pretty good this year at the University of Cincinnati. But the last championship of any kind was the Reds back in 1990, right? Like, how starved does it feel where you are?
Very starved. And like I said, you know, talking about the curse of Bo Jackson earlier, it was almost like at first, you know, it was about the Bengals. And all of a sudden, you see it kind of getting up, being applied to so many other things, where the Reds aren't winning, or, you know, FC Cincinnati, the MLS club that started, has been atrocious. It seemed like there was no success of note in the city from a sporting standpoint. And I mean, if we really want to take it one step further, as somebody who was an outsider coming in, one of the things I always found fascinating about the city of Cincinnati is that its best years were behind them by a very large amount. You know, once you saw the shift of how the American economy went, how it went off of, you know, basically cities that were based on rivers or by bodies of water, how whenever they were the top cities in the United States, slowly as the economy moved and as technology shifted, that began to be less of the case. And it seemed like that success that they wanted just hadn't been there in a long time. And you've seen, you know, a growth in Cincinnati over the last several years from a city standpoint. You know, the area between between the Red Stadium and the Bengal Stadium, now called the Banks. You know, they've really worked hard to develop that as a city. You know, Joe Burrow famously in the middle of the year got knocked because he said there was nothing to do in Cincinnati.
Fortunately, there's not a ton to do in Cincinnati, so it's not, you know, nobody's going out to clubs and bars and getting COVID every weekend.
Yes, he said this as an explanation as for why the Bengals were dealing with COVID so well. They'd avoided like all of the outbreaks that other teams seemingly had.
The Bengals had some fun with that as well. The mascot gave him a book of things to do as a joke Christmas gift. But I think Cincinnati feels like it's a city on the rise. It definitely feels like the city wanted a winner, wanted to embrace a winner. And now it might have one, not just this year, but in the years to come.
With all of this in mind, Ben, with a look at the future in mind now, I'm looking at the AFC, right? And I see, I mean, the list of quarterbacks is absurd. Like the NFC, I tip my cap to you. Great. You know, all that. But like, you don't have Patrick Mahomes. You don't have Josh Allen. You don't have Justin Herbert. You don't have Lamar Jackson in your conference. That is what the AFC is looking like. That is what the Bengals are competing with. And obviously now with Burrow and with this team that is investing more in its future than ever, are you getting the sense that optimism is now the predominant mood? That actually this is not just a one-off Cinderella story. They're expecting real change here.
Yeah, I think when you look at how the Bengals are positioned and what they've done the last couple of years, it definitely feels like a team that is positioned for success in the years to come. I mean, just look at the AFC North. Right now, you've got the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger's retirement, are wondering what they're going to do with the quarterback situation. Baker Mayfield, his situation in Cleveland is a little bit in flux. We're not sure how that's going to play out. I think Baltimore is going to be very good, but they just fired their defensive coordinator, oh, by the way, who got completely torched in two games against the Bengals this season. And then that leaves Cincinnati. Right now, when you look at the young core with Burrow, with Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Mixon, T. Higgins, you have to feel pretty good about where they're at. And especially as you listed that list of elite quarterbacks and guys who are game changers and franchise changers, it's going to be really difficult to win at the highest level if you don't have one of them. The Bengals do feel like they have a guy who can not just be good this year and win them a Super Bowl this year, but keep them competitive for years to come.
Let's talk about Monday. What advice would you give to a city that has not tasted that?
Best advice I could give you is cherish it, because you never know, as everyone who's lived in Cincinnati for the last three decades knows, you never know when that next playoff win is going to come around, much less a chance to win a Super Bowl. So enjoy it, celebrate it responsibly. The city has seen so much heartbreak and pain that there's a reason those Cincinnati public school kids are not going to be in school on Monday. So I think that there is a reason to celebrate and celebrate thoroughly if the Bengals do win it.
Ben, baby, thank you for indulging us and educating us on ESPN Daily.
Thank you, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.